I'd like to close with a cover of Andy doing Gautier. Thank you.
Well, live, they were like a train wreck.
I mean, I really just like the dancing bears. That's kind of it.
What the hell was I doing in this song?
Spotify's like, did you mean farts in a blender?
I think I need to go to church after this.
Oh, ass splinter.
Known for the gotcha questions here.
That's what babies do.
It's the 413. Let's tell everybody to listen to our show.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the 413 podcast featuring the PCB peeps. We have tonight Abby.
Hello.
We have Andy.
What's up?
We've got Bill.
Yo, what's poppin', peeps?
We've got Jared.
Hi.
And I am Eric, and tonight we have a special guest. This is the fourth installment of our Tales from the Pits episode, where we focus on the Pittsfield punk scene from, we'll call it back in the day, since we haven't discovered a good timeline yet. And our special guest tonight has an astounding resume, tremendous discography, and some of the most influential bands from the scene. We want to welcome Justin.
How you doing? Thanks.
Yo.
Well, we're super excited tonight. And again, this kind of came up because as we've been talking about some of the early bands that have influenced our previous friends who have been on the podcast, there's a band that's come up a few times, and we definitely want to talk about this band tonight. But I kind of want to start off, Justin, by asking a question that is, I guess this will answer a lot for us. There seems to be two main bandmates that you've had that are pretty consistent across the bands that you've played in. And I really got to know about how you met and came to start playing music with Dom and Matt.
I met Matt. So the first show I ever went to was in Carol's basement in Pittsfield. I forget what street. What street? It was Wish, which was the first band Matt was in. Which then became Outlet. And Big Mistake played from Connecticut.
Whoa.
Yeah, Big Mistake was killer live.
Awesome, yeah.
I saw them a few times, but seeing them in a basement in Pittsfield for your first show was kind of, it was awesome.
Right.
And that's how I met Matt. And then we became friends, and Wish turned into Outlet. And, you know, I don't know, not many people know this, but Wish and Outlet, they played with like legendary bands in Western Mass when bands would come through. They played with Born Against a few times.
Whoa.
Jawbreaker.
What?
Yeah. They played with Green Day.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Wish played with like, I think they might have played with Rorschach. I can't remember. I know Matt told me at one point they were supposed to play with the 1.6 band, but the 1.6 band canceled. Outlet played with some good bands too. I think Wish for some reason maybe played with better bands though when they were Wish originally. But anyway, I met Matt through Wish and we became friends. And then Outlet kind of broke up and we started Illinois Jacket.
And that's definitely the band that we want. One of the bands we want to discuss tonight, because they're all great, but that's a name that's come up 100 times that we've been told we have to talk about. So,
well, I was, so then Matt and I started with just us, and we needed a drummer. And Dom, I can't really remember if Dom had only been playing drums a little and was kind of like, because the Illinois Jacket, if you listen to it, it's kind of wonky. It's kind of like all over the place. And some people just didn't want to even try to play drums to it. And I think Dom was the only one that kind of was like, I can play drums to this. And then that was it. It was just the three of us for a long time. We did a recording and there was no vocals because no one wanted to do vocals, or we couldn't find anybody that fit with the three of us. And then we finally found Scott to do vocals.
I had the pleasure, and I want to call it out real quick now, because there's a site that you all can check out on Bandcamp, hosted by JHP. And so Jay, who has put together this great collection of local bands, has quite a bit of, I think probably all the Illinois Jacket stuff that was put out is available on JHP on Bandcamp right now.
Yeah, I saw that. It's awesome.
So I got to listen because it's something I hadn't heard before. I didn't, you know, I wasn't around when you guys were playing live, and I went through and listened. And even from something that came out almost 30 years ago, it's fresh. It's interesting.
Thanks.
I love that it goes from these like fast paced parts, and then it has this like bounce to it where it just keeps this same energy, but it's like cutting the time in half. And it's such a cool listen. So if anyone hasn't heard it yet, like go on, check it out, like start to finish. There's so many interesting pieces on this that just musically it's super tight. And to your point, these are not simple 4-4, like go for it, here's the song, four chords kind of thing. There's a lot of complexity to these songs, which I can understand why you'd be intimidated as a drummer.
Well, we were all really, at that point too, Matt and I, and eventually Dom, and then Scott, we all listened to a lot of jazz too, but we couldn't play jazz because we weren't talented enough to play jazz. We kind of just like let it influence our band, our punk band.
Well, it's like distorted jazz in my mind. You know,
you can. That's where we got the name from, Illinois Jacket, the jazz musician.
I was going to ask that. I was going to say, where did you get
the spelling of it?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. So that's why it's kind of wonky and all over the place.
It's super cool though. Like it just works. And it's something that I feel like I wish would have kept going. Like obviously styles change.
Yeah,
we
never really got, the only people who seemed to appreciate it were, because we used to try to get shows, like, you know, we'd be like, we'd want to play a show. We practiced every week, sometimes twice a week. And we wanted to play tons of shows, and we'd send our demos out, and we'd hardly ever hear back from anybody. The first person to ever support us outside of Berkshire County was Jim McNaughton from Devoid of Faith in Albany. He had a radio show on WRPI.
Cool.
And we sent him our demo and he started playing it on the radio show, and then that's how we played with Los Crudos. Jim, when Los Crudos was in Albany, Jim was like, you guys gotta play with Los Crudos. It was odd. Drop Dead, Los Crudos, Hail Mary, us, and Devoid of Faith.
What a show.
Yeah, that's a sick show.
Whereabouts in Albany? What, do you remember the venue?
I think it was this place called The Loft or something. It was like the second we ended up seeing a bunch of shows there, and Seppuku played there too. The grindcore band we did after Illinois Jacket, Seppuku played there as well. The Lofter, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a great space. It didn't last long. It didn't last long at all, but we saw like Jenny Piccolo there, The Locust. They had a bunch of good shows there.
So I have to ask, just because you mentioned band practice, and this is something we've chatted about with each person that's been on the Tales from the Pits episodes, is was there, and this can be any band, but it seems like you kind of play with the same dudes pretty regularly, but was there an after practice ritual that you guys had? Was there like you always went out to the same place to go eat, or was there anything that you guys would do together as friends after playing music that was something that was just like a great way to wrap up practice, or was it everyone just kind of took their stuff and headed out?
If it was like, if we were practicing on a Friday or Thursday or Friday after practice, like maybe Matt and I, and sometimes Scott would go to the East Side and get pizza.
Nice.
Or we just listened to records.
Right on.
But that was about the extent of it.
Well, that I think that's the interesting piece when you're in a band, when you get to sort of become friends with folks. And I've played in bands where we weren't all great friends, but you just got together to play music. And sometimes you find the right group of friends where, you know, you stick with them and you try different things. And part of that is just bonding over music. What are the things that you like, and what are the things you share with each other that maybe then become the next project, you know?
Yeah, we all pretty much had the same taste in music. There were a few things, like Matt was a wicked Deadhead. Wicked and Deadhead. And that's one band I never really got into. And Matt and Dom really liked No Effects.
Nice.
They were never my cup of tea. But,
what?
Yeah. No.
We won't call it blasphemy. I mean, it's
Andy might.
But they were always trying to sell me. Matt was always trying to sell me on Grateful Dead.
Never, mission not accomplished.
No.
I've never gotten there myself.
I mean, no. I really just like the Dancing Bears. That's kind of it. I'm more of a visual guy.
I remember there was a big fad, big trend that happened probably right around that same time. And on Elm Street, they opened Dead Ahead, the smoke shop, where you had all your Grateful Dead gear. And I remember being in like fifth grade at that point and going, I got to get a Dancing Bear shirt. I've never heard this band before, but it just seems like the cool thing to do. It's just kind of funny how that works.
If you ever see any old pictures of Illinois Jacket, some do exist. Matt's bass had like a AC sticker. I don't want to say the band's name from Boston. Anal.
Oh.
Yeah, he had like an anal sticker on his face. Then
wrong with
Dancing
that?
Bear.
I'm actually going to make that louder.
Like, what are you doing?
That's the best combination ever.
I remember hearing that band for the first time, and I was like, this is a lot.
Which one? The Grateful Dead or Anal?
to be fair, true. I couldn't tell the difference.
we saw them a couple of times.
Really?
Yeah, we went Tomorrow from Japan played in Boston. And AC opened for them, and it was just like, it was too much.
Dan played them for me, I think, once, and I was like, oh my, like, I don't think I can't hang with this.
Yeah, no, I never really got into them either.
It's like when you watch a really gory horror movie and you're like, I gotta show all my friends how like bloody this is. It's like,
well, live, they were like a train wreck.
Really?
Like an orchestrated train wreck. It's kind of hard to explain.
Like, yeah.
Organized train wreck.
I like that.
So it's safe to say they weren't an influence on Illinois Jacket.
No. I think as far as like hardcore and punk rock, the main things we listened to were like Born Against, Rorschach, Supertouch. 1.6 Band was always a huge, like one of my favorite bands. Bar none, like any genre of music. I listen to a lot of different types of music. So like 1.6 Band to me is like, they should be so much bigger.
Where are they from?
They're from New York. They were a New York band. It was Kevin Egan, the singer from Beyond. I don't know if any of you guys ever gotten to Beyond from New York. Yeah. Like Tom Capone was in it. But 1.6 Band was just, to me, it was just like, I always wanted to be able to play guitar like that dude that plays in that band.
So speaking of, you know, listening to Illinois Jacket, for example, you know, I would say like there's a lot of interesting guitar riffs, we'll call them, in there. And it's not something that you heard with that style of music very common, like, right? Like it felt like you were maybe at best the folks playing guitar were like, okay, I can use three fingers and play a chord. And but there's a lot more like complexity to this. Like, so when you picked up a guitar, like, were you lessons, self-taught? Like, what is your experience with?
I had an uncle. I have an uncle, my uncle Billy, who's the man, who, when he was younger, he played in rock bands, but then he played in bluegrass bands. And I like kind of grew up going to like some bluegrass festivals with him. And I got kind of like exposed, and I still like, I love old time music and like early bluegrass, not the modern stuff, but so that, I think that had a big influence on my guitar playing actually. And sure. Folk music, like, you know, I like, and the jazz and like trying to like play, you know, like come up with my own style of guitar.
Yeah. I mean, I think it definitely comes through on the recordings and probably throughout like other bands that we've listened to. And so, you know, what we were able to kind of find and go through, and I think we all went through and listened to some stuff, but Hell to Pay, The Loading, Guilt Lust, what was available to us, which was kind of limited.
Danny put that record out. Danny, oh, nice. That was his label he had for a while.
Awesome.
And he's the one who released that, the Guilt Lust record.
Oh, nice. Man, that's a lot. It's a big undertaking to put a record out. So.
Yeah, and I don't think he made any money on it. So. I think he probably still has some copies he'd love to give you.
There's 700 available on Discogs right now. Yeah. All out of the same address. Weird.
We recorded that with Kurt. I always say his name wrong. Blue, or the guitar player from Converge, at his studio in Salem.
Oh,
that was very cool. That was an awesome weekend.
Right on.
Danny actually came and hung out with us. It was cool.
Awesome. I've only seen Guilt Lust play once. I think it was at Rebel Sound Records, maybe, or maybe it was prior at Source of the Nile.
Yeah, it had to be Source of the Nile. We were actually supposed to play with the 1.6 band when they played at Rebel Sound Records, but we just couldn't get it together for that show, which is a big disappointment for me personally. I mean, I still went. I still got to see them.
Yeah, yeah. Great venue, by the way. And I do want to talk about venues real quick. So, obviously, we've mentioned places, and there's probably places that have come and gone. But was there like a particular favorite place that you like to play, whether it was the sound in there, the size of the room, the intimacy, anything?
I'm trying to think. Like I said, Illinois Jacket played a couple shows in Albany, and then it was just like basements.
Sure.
And that, around Berkshire County. And did we play at BC's? No, that was Seppuku.
I remember one of my first shows I went to see Illinois Jacket was it the basement of the library?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was such an awesome show.
My demigods played that show?
Yes.
We played on the steps of City Hall, too.
Yes! Oh, dude.
That show was great.
That was so fun. Because I was going to Taconic at the time, and we all came up, and it was just so fun to see live music in front of like City Hall, running through North Street and stuff. And
Scott, if I remember right, Scott was being like a madman.
I think I saw photos of that. I think there's photos around.
I forget about that show every once in a while, and then every once in a while I see those photos and I'm like, why did they let us do that? Let these guys play in the steps of City Hall. That's a good place.
It seriously blows my mind, the places and shows that I hear about having happened. So like the library, like what an odd location for loud music.
The library was awesome.
It was really cool.
It was great.
Did they have multiple shows there? I can't remember.
Yeah. The Southdown one was the one where they came and shut it down at the end, right? They're like, it's too loud.
I think there was a big gap. I think that there were shows like late 90s, and I think it came back like maybe like 2000. Yeah, I remember.
No, it was later, I think.
Yeah,
like 2003?
No, I don't think it was that late. I think it was like 2000, because I think like Red Reaction came out and played, and then there was a couple like Pittsfield bands. It probably was Citizen Newsy Drive By at the time, Southdown, maybe People's Choice. It's like a strange eclectic mix of bands that played, but that was a lot of the shows at that point. Was just anyone who wanted to play pretty much got on the show, and a lot of times it was the same two guys bouncing to different instruments for every band, which is, you know, I guess that's just the way it goes sometimes. And I think when we had Joe on, Joe said his first show that he went to was Asthmatics at the library. So that was, seems to be a venue that was near and dear for a while.
We used to have shows at my friend's basement on Worthington Street too.
Right on.
And she had some decent bands rolled through there too. I think Hatebreed played, like Hatebreed, like right after Josta 14 broke up and Hatebreed had started. I think they played there, and just weird, like just this dumpy basement would get creepy. Illinois Jacket didn't really play outside of Berkshire County much. Seppuku got more shows for some reason. I don't know if it's because we released vinyl or but we got more. I think at that point too, we knew more people.
So let's talk about Seppuku. So Seppuku, same members as Illinois Jacket, but with a different front man.
Well, it started just me and Dom wanted to do something heavier. And my brother, Mikey did vocals. Yeah. And actually, originally I played bass, and this kid from Brazil played guitar. Hmm. A friend of mine's boyfriend, Felipe, played guitar. I wrote everything. He just played guitar in it. And then he went back to Brazil. So we were like, well, fuck it. We don't need a bass player. We'll just be guitar. Because Matt really wasn't into it at first. Mm-hmm. So we played a show, I think, with Nine Shocks Terror. Without bass at a place in Springfield. It was Altar of Sacrifice.
Altar of Sacrifice. Oh, shit. Haven't heard that band name in a while.
Nine Shocks Terror. I forget who else.
Yeah, well, this is a wild show.
Right? Oh, the showcase
I've heard
show
those are some
there.
Wild shows.
I can't remember who else played, but we played it without bass. And then after the show, Matt came up and was like, all right, I'm going to play bass for you guys. He's like, that sounded like shit. You're like, okay. And that was it.
That's awesome.
That's how Matt joined the band out of pity, more or less.
It's a good call though, because when you play at like really fast speeds and you don't have a solid,
yeah, it was horrible. It was,
you don't hear, like, there's not enough kick drum that really cuts through, and like you just lose the whole like bottom end.
Yeah, it was a good move. It was for us anyway.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think I've only seen Seppuku one time, a girls club show.
Yeah,
probably 2001 maybe.
I'm fairly certain it was my first show I ever went to.
I believe we had to bring cans for a discount on a ticket. I remember correctly.
Last in Line played that show too, if I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I saw Last in Line play with Nine Shocks Terror up at Hampshire College, and they set a bunch of fireworks off in.
Oh my God. How old were you?
In 2000? Was that 2000? 2001?
Yeah, I threw a couch at that show.
Yeah.
That was me.
I guess I was 14 or 15. I just remember Nine Shocks Terror plays. There's like a Roman candle that gets set off in the middle. The room's filling up with smoke. Oh, you got
no way.
Abby's holding
up the flyer from the show. Wait.
But I don't know if Seppuku actually. What show is that?
This isn't the Girls Club.
That was the Girls Club one. Yeah,
that was the Girls Club one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Citizen Uzi drive.
We'll have to share the flyer out with you all. But it's funny you're at that show, because I remember going outside and then someone opened the window and the smoke just starts coming out the window. And 19 does like a jump dive out the window. And then I think like after all the chaos was done, the piano had gotten like tipped over.
it was for shows at Hampshire, right? For a long time.
Forever, as far as I know. It was a wild show as a 14 or 15 year old going to that, but I think it's what made me fall in love with punk rock and the scene. It was just like, this is cool. Like, it's a little dangerous and it's fun and people are having a good time, and I like that.
Nine Shocks Terror shows were always fun.
That was the only one I went to, and it was it wasn't as fun at the time when when there was fireworks going off everywhere, but it was looking back on it fondly. So I saw on Discogs that there is still copies of Human Stench available if you want, if anyone wants to purchase the Seppuku album.
Still, I think available. Matt has them.
Okay.
I think Matt has leftover copies of the Seppuku 7-inch.
Nice.
He's probably selling them on here then. Matt, if you're listening, $6 for shipping is a little bit high. Can we cut that down to $5? Get it, make it an even 10 for the whole thing shipped.
I mean, shit, we're gonna buy it. Where isn't he lives around us, doesn't he?
Like, we'll find him.
Pick it up at your house.
Go knock at his house. Save him on the taxes. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Money out of Bill's mouth.
Yeah. So going back real quick to Eastside, is that the best pizza in Pittsfield?
Yes, it's the best pizza.
Yeah. No hesitation. No hesitation.
It's the best pizza. I've been to all the New Haven spots and they're good, but I'm sorry, nothing beats Eastside.
Right?
I tell everybody that. We actually, when bands would play shows in Pittsfield, we would insist, like, as long as they weren't like vegans or... We would insist that they go to the Eastside and try it. And we never had one person go there and be like, yeah, this is okay. They'd always be like, oh my God, this is amazing.
You're right on.
I think it's like the patina there, right? It's just like, it's got so much, just the years and years and years of that place. Just,
it's everything about it.
It adds to the whole experience.
Coal-fired pizza oven.
I have to say that we did a podcast last year where we visited a bunch of local Pittsfield pizza spots. Eastside came in second for us. But
Papa Joe's.
Papa Joe's came in first.
And Papa Joe's is really good, too.
Yeah.
It was tough. It wasn't Eastside's best showing. We had to judge it on that night, but... But I think the point is going back into Eastside was just awesome. It was such the environment in there. It was packed. Like we're talking about, this was what, a Sunday at like 5 o'clock, packed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody and their mother was there. Like it's like such a happening spot.
Yeah. There was no seats available. Like it was packed.
Yeah.
I went Friday after the gym to grab two pizzas and I did not call them in ahead of time. I waited an hour and a half. It was so busy.
Whoa.
It was like crazy.
And it was worth the hour and a half, wasn't it?
It was.
Cash only, ATM in the back.
Yes.
and the thing is, when you think about it, it's like, oh, they could open up a bigger place. No.
They don't need to.
It should never move. It should never change. It should just do that for the rest of our lives.
A little brick, what? Rectangle? They're like, no.
100%.
Let me ask you a question, Justin.
Yeah.
We always kind of get to this at some point, but I'm interested. What is like a guilty pleasure song here? Something people would never guess that you would like.
A guilty pleasure song?
A song like if it comes on the radio, you roll the windows up because you don't want your friends to hear it. That you know you like it.
He's not going to want to admit it.
Well, I'm trying to think.
We'll just call you Mike, so you think everyone thinks it's your brother, Mike.
I don't know. I wouldn't even roll the window. I like so many different kinds of music.
He's with
all
me.
All right,
you
yeah.
Like what you like, whatever.
Guilty pleasure song. What the hell is that song called?
Is it Blue Monday by Orgy? Is that it?
No, it's not a song. Actually, it's the guy. It's a. Now you're just somebody that I used to know.
Oh,
Gautier.
I love that song. People were all over it because it got so big so fast. But then I heard it and I'm like, that's because it's such a good song. Their voices are incredible. And I mean, that's what I would, maybe around some people, I would roll the window.
Just to sing along, right? That's the thing. Are you taking the high harmony or the?
I actually sing, but I'm just listening.
That's totally fair. There's actually a YouTube video where they break it down, and that song is like three different sampled songs at different speeds that they kind of like synced up together. And so there's a familiarity to it. Yeah, check it out. There's like I want to say it's almost like a Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass type like instrumental track that they put in there and slowed it down. And it just has this like kind of like little loopy elevator music vibe to it.
And that was it, right? That was just like a one hit. What the guy who?
Yeah, that was like a solo thing he did, and I think he's back with the band that he was in before, right? I think that was like.
Oh, he was an anal, right? Yeah.
He wanted to do something a little softer for a little bit to help out the vocal cords relax.
Smart.
I just remember listening to them with Dan and being like, I think I need to go to church after this. I don't. Yeah. I
don't. They were really something else.
And he was like, they're so good. And I'm like, I don't know if I can condone this. Like, this is just kind of hardcore, man.
They were definitely entertaining live.
Yeah.
Was there another band, like locally, a Pittsfield band that you like, maybe that came out before or after, like some of the
Wish is like top.
That's the
tier.
One.
And even Outlet, you know, I saw Outlet a lot, which was basically Wish, but trying to be a little more hardcore,
yeah.
I guess you could say. But Wish, I got to see Wish. Actually, I think I saw them a couple times before they turned into Outlet. And Wish was just so good.
Yeah. There's always that band that everyone connects with. And, you know, it's funny because we've heard a lot on the podcast that it's been like, the Asthmatics has been kind of the big one for the folks that came a little bit later. So it's great to hear that like Wish in sort of like the more mid or even early. Is Wish like as early as 93 or are we talking later?
Maybe, yeah, I'm horrible with dates, but okay. Yeah, maybe 93, 94.
We are too. We've done this podcast 100 times and we sort of like horrible. Settle on a random date that we think is probably close. But if anyone's keeping track.
They're all saying early 90s, mid 90s, late 90s, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
So early mid 90s. And then that kind of pushed us into the modern day. And, you know, you looking at some of the timeline for you, you played for all the way through like what the mid 2010s in bands. Were you still playing live or mostly recording at that point?
After Sepulchre, I wasn't in bands for like almost 10 years.
Really?
Because I had my first child.
Right on.
And then Matt and Dom were in another band. There was a band that made me, I went to a show for the first time in a long time and it made me want to play music again. I can't remember what band it was. Maybe it'll come to me, but I went to a show and I was like, I want to do music again. And when Sepulchre used to play with Last in Line, we became really good friends with all those guys. And I always loved DJ's vocals from Last in Line. And so we started Guiltlust. We started recording and one of us was going to do the vocals and then we're like, okay, we suck. We can't do this. And even though it really wasn't something I thought DJ would be into, I played it for him and he's like, I'll do vocals. So that's how DJ got in the Guiltlust and Sean.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I want to do two guitars. And that's kind of how that happened. But I hadn't been, it was almost 10 years since I had played music.
Like, wow. Wait, did you miss it? Like,
yeah, I did. Yeah. I did. I missed it.
It's like that, the live shows and everything. And
yeah, and I hadn't even been to a show in forever. And then I went to that show and I was like, man, I want to do this again.
Right on.
Well, the whole scene softened around that time. I felt like there wasn't a ton of bands playing. There was a lull. And I think it took until probably when Rebel Sound Records opened up and had like a great new venue space, like in the center of town. And I think was encouraging a lot of kind of the situation you were in, which is like people who hadn't played in a bit. That's like, hey, like I got a spot I can play now. It's worth maybe trying out a band again or trying some project out or maybe a project that I was working on recording and get some other folks involved and have a place that you can actually land and play. Cause that was the thing. Every place had closed. Everything that we had done, I felt like every day closed. Like we were playing shows at the Girls Club. They stopped having shows there. The Library stopped having shows there. Erases for a little bit. Up on Tonic, even the Arena was a place. The Arena was a place that we went to a ton of shows.
I think that was the phase I was kind of out of the loop. I never saw a show there. It seemed like it would have been a perfect place to have.
Yeah.
actually Hatebreed was supposed to play there in 2001. It was like they had an event called Slugfest. It was just all day of like hardcore bands, and they were supposed to headline, and they either didn't show up or couldn't show up or something. And it was a lot of hardcore that day, but a lot of people were disappointed in not being able to see Hatebreed.
I think Guiltlust's first show was at the Flywheel.
Nice.
The new Flywheel or the old Flywheel?
There's video footage of it too. And it was a fun show. DJ and I fell into a thing where we'd always try to fuck with each other.
Yeah.
And that's where it started.
Awesome. That's awesome.
So here's a question for you too. If you could go back and play with one of your bands one more time, which one would it be?
That's deep, Andy.
Yeah, wow.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Holy cow.
I have to say Illinois Jacket.
Oh, yes.
That was the first band I ever did.
So what are the chances of us getting a reunion going?
Right?
Just totally out?
Not good.
Well, I mean, you can set it up at the Boys and Girls Club. You know, everyone's got to bring a can of soup or something to get a discount ticket.
I can't even remember. I try to play that stuff sometimes. And I'm like, I can't remember this. Like, what the hell was I doing in this song?
It's funny. You're like, yeah, like it's not riding a bike.
Yeah.
Definitely not. All right. So as guitar being your main instrument, other than your stint as a bass player, what do you think your sound is? Like, what are you trying to achieve when you're playing guitar? And I know that this might be different in bands, but like, what's your like dream rig, or what are you going for when you're playing guitar?
Like for my signal to be as direct and as pure as possible. So I was actually like a nerd about like, if I could have my pickup connected directly to the wire, to the cord, I'm sorry, that goes into the amp, that's how I would do it. If I could do that. Like I never was big on pedals or effects, just like a good amp, good speakers, and a good guitar and good cables, and that's all you need.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
And I'm not like that anymore, but
well,
when I was younger, that's how I was.
It's funny. I think there is an interview that I was listening to, and it was talking about actually Eddie Van Halen, and very similar concept. Like, I want to just plug my, I don't need a distortion pedal. I don't need any more gain. Like my hands are what are going to create the dynamic.
When you can play like him, you don't need it.
True.
And I think they said that like Billy Corgan went to go play his rig. They were at a studio or something and went in and like turned it on. And like, he couldn't like hold the guitar because it was the way that things were shaking and moving.
Yeah.
And he probably played with like the loudest plexi of all time at that point. And really does sort of shake the room. But it's interesting how that, like where you can tell certain guitarists when they're setting up this large pedal board and you're like, all right, I'm expecting the world right now. And sometimes the guys who show up and it's like, I'm just plugging my guitar in, and that's like the sound. That's what you're looking for.
I think if you look in the show on the steps of the City Hall, I had like a JC800 stack. It wasn't mine. I don't know if any of you guys are old enough to remember B&D Music. Which was a music shop in Pittsfield. And the guy who owned it was the greatest guy ever. Chris was his name. And I remember going in there and being like, oh, my band's playing this show. And no, I only have this little practice amp. And this dude, like, he didn't really know me. He just knew me from being in this shop and getting stuff. He'd be like, you want to borrow my amp, man? And I was like,
whoa.
Yeah, sure. He was just like, I would show up at his house. He would just give me like a Marshall stack. Just don't fuck up back when you're done. And that was it. The guy was awesome. He was the best dude.
That's freaking so cool.
That's a lot of amp to trust with anybody.
It is, especially a 17-year-old kid, 18-year-old.
Right? Yeah.
You're like, how do I turn? Why are there two power buttons? Like, oh, yeah, fuck.
You got an AC sticker on your guitar. He's like, I don't know if I should let you borrow this. He's like, oh shit, I love that band. Here, take this amp.
He's like, at least it's not Grateful Dead. It's fine.
If I remember too, he would do like sound for some of the shows at like, you know, just, he would just do it for free.
That's like awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
I'm definitely an amp nerd though, and like, you know, in the amps and like in Guilt Loss, I had a plexi at the end of it. And that amp was like, oh, those things are so sweet.
It's scary how, like, just not how they sound, but how they feel sometimes when you're, when someone's playing one at a high volume, it just it hits a very, very different way.
Oh, I had an Orange Dual Tear too, and those things are awesome, and they're only like 30 watts.
I got one of the Dark Tears.
What, you do?
15 watt, yeah.
The like, oh, a little.
Oh, damn, dude.
Yeah. Micro Tear. No, Micro Tear.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tiny box.
Yeah. There's like 20 watts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that sound? I'm thinking about getting one of those.
It's not bad.
They're incredible.
Tiny little thing, not much to it.
Orange makes awesome stuff.
The dark one. I got the dark one, which is a little more gain and wick up.
Yeah, it's got like a shape, like a shape knob. That's kind of a, it's kind of a tone, but it's almost like it only lives between 10 and 2. Outside of that, it just falls apart. So it's a very tight, like, you really, it's not like one where you're like, all right, I'm either going to be here or here. It's like, you really have to like fine tune it right in the middle to get that sound. But they sound great, and they power a big, I mean, they can power a 412 and make it sound real, real boomy. So
that's crazy.
They're really cool.
Super portable. Single tube. It's nice.
Yeah, I bought an Orange OR15. It's like a 7 versus 15 like watt that? Switchable. I love it. It's really cool. I bought a Orange 212 to go with it too, and like just the V30s in it, and it sounds really good. I don't think it's really universal though. I think it's like, it's certain things it works well for. I also have a Marshall JCM 900, which I love because that was just like one of the first tube amps I ever bought. I got it on eBay. Yeah. I remember they shipped it like no padding in a box, and just playing that and being like, oh, I love this like scratchy diode clipping gain stage and stuff. And it's really cool. And it just works for everything. And the Orange was like, I'm going to get that same sound out of that. And not quite, but it's got something really, really unique to it, which I like.
I had the Marshall 900 SLX. Have you ever played one of those? I think it's like a higher gain version. They're cool amps. That's what I recorded the Guilt Lust LP with. Actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I had the 4100 dual reverb, and then I had one that was like it's a 50 watt. I don't think it was SLX though. It was another 900. Shit, can't think of what it was now. But it was like a 50 watt that had a half power switch on the back. I just love that sound. It's something cool about it.
Amps are like a dangerous thing to get into, actually.
It can be an expensive hobby.
It can be.
Lots of maintenance.
Yep.
Got to take care of them. Tubes, the whole thing. It's nuts.
So, Justin, I'd like to ask too. So, I'm known for the gotcha questions here. All right. So, this is coming at you.
You see me cringe every time he asks a question. Every time he starts, I'm like, oh, no.
Because it's never a gotcha question ever. So, all right. You're on the steps. We already asked, like, hey, what band would you go back in time and play with again? You're like, hey, Illinois Jacket, you're on the steps. You can set up a show. You can have three bands that you can play with.
From that era?
From any era that you want to play with. As Illinois Jacket on the steps of the Pittsfield Courthouse.
So we'll know how much of a team player you are if you pick Grateful Dead for Matt. That's right.
So what would be like your dream show, right? You're in Pittsfield, you're playing with Illinois Jacket, you guys are ending.
Any three bands. Black Sabbath, the Ramones.
Dead Rats. Oh, okay.
Black Sabbath, the Ramones, and maybe Straight Ahead.
Nice. Oh, that would be a good show.
Hell yeah. What's the ticket price on that? What do you think?
Yeah. Hold on. Can of soup, half price. Okay.
Black Sabbath from like 70 or 71.
What? Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. I like the Ramones in there too. I'm like, all right.
Let's go. Show.
I know. I've always said if I could only pick two bands to listen to the rest of my life, it would be Black Sabbath and the Ramones. That's all you need. Yeah. That's all you really need.
Covers life.
That's a solid. Those are solid picks right there.
Yeah, seriously. I don't want to be buried, man, in a pet cemetery.
Joey?
that Black Sabbath took the Ramones on tour with them.
What?
Really?
Yeah. Johnny Ramone talked about it, I've seen flyers. It didn't last long because the Black Sabbath fans did not like the Ramones.
That's a bummer.
I'm right. That is a bummer. Come on, guys.
But I always thought that was always like, I'm always like, man, imagine if the Ramones and Black Sabbath ever played together. Then I found out, I think it was on the Never Say Die tour.
Wow.
All right. Sabbath,
it was that one, Sabbath brought them, and it didn't last a lot of shows. I think the guys in Sabbath were the only ones in the that were in the
happy they were there.
Those shows.
It's funny. I was reminiscing about some early childhood music memories, sort of like what are the things I listened to when I was 5 years old? Is there anything that I heard? And I have a really early memory of my uncle had this large station wagon where the back seat looked out the back. And so he's got this, and I remember he would load up the station wagon with my cousins and I, and we would go to Anoda Lake and hang out for the day. But there was only one tape, and I don't know why this was like true for probably every uncle or anyone I've ever met. They have like one tape in their car. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. But he had Black Sabbath, and I remember we would be in the back. We would want him to play Iron Man over and over and over. It just couldn't get enough of like how cool of a song that was, as like, you know, be like 7 or 8 years old. And I still have that like really early memory. And then when I became like later in my teen years and actually like put on a full album, it's like, this is insane. This is so cool.
Yeah.
I'd always said if you could travel back in time and be like at a party in like 69 or 70, you know, and everybody's like, they're all hippies, and somebody walks in the party and it's like, hey man, I just got this record by this new band called Black Sabbath. Let's put it on. And then just to watch everybody's reactions when they heard it, they were probably like, what the fuck is this?
Right?
Yeah. It's definitely one of those bands where it's like, you wish you could go back and listen to them for the first time again. Right? Yeah. Like where you're just like, it's something about it where it's just, it's mind blowing to where you're like, I've never heard something like this before.
They influenced so many other bands, and even a lot of the early punk dudes were talk about how much they were into Sabbath.
Well, it had some good speed to it, right? Like it wasn't always. Well,
listen to Paranoid. I mean, Paranoid. Yeah. You know, it's like a 3-chord punk song.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. It's like something for everybody. You think they picked that one up from the Ramones?
They had a time machine.
Want to play one like this?
That was a good question.
Andy's got them all tonight. Look at
that. I know, Andy's rocking.
Listen, I got the gotcha questions. I know the viewers, they're like, oh no, he's going to get him in a trap with his questions. Your brother's going to call you after and be like, really? You don't want to play with Seppuku, huh?
Yeah, I know. I thought about that.
Eric, did we have a viewer question related to Illinois Jacket?
Oh, we did, didn't we?
Oh, God.
Maybe.
Anonymous says, do you feel guilty about breaking my couch at that show? That's not the question.
Do you remember it, Abby? I don't have it in my notes. And I have notes, believe it or not. This is a professional podcast.
I'm gonna do some scrolling to get back.
Yeah, go back
to
and
one
find
of the mentions.
Yeah. Please do. All right. So what do you miss most? Like about playing live shows, playing in those bands? Like what's the thing you miss most?
I think getting a chance to see, like, maybe you would play with a band you never heard before, and they would be really good, and you'd be like, oh, you know, you'd get turned on to a new band. I think that might be the biggest thing. That, and it's just fun to play, or it could be fun to play, depending on where you were at the point in the band. But
yeah,
we're probably playing, just seeing other bands live or discovering new bands that you were playing with was probably the best part of it.
Yeah, 100%. Abby, you were making a face.
Was there a predated version of Seppuku with a different name?
Oh, Ass Splinter.
Yeah.
Not about that. Yes. That's when Felipe was in the band, actually, Brazil.
I think I've got a sound clip for the beginning. You're so excitedly saying Ass Splinter.
Because myself and my brother all played like baseball, minor league baseball. And I don't know if any of you guys ever played, but all the benches, parks in Pittsfield.
Yeah.
Literally, what? If you slid down the bench, you got a splinter.
Oh, yes, they were so bad.
Was this specifically Deming Park? Like,
yeah,
every park.
Unfinished, pressure-treated.
That's how we came up with that name.
That's a great you sit down, you're like, ah, god damn it.
Yep.
Yeah, and that and the yelp that you let out, that's got to be, that's what the vocals have to sound like. Yeah. It's perfect.
I think Mikey was only like 13 or 14. In that band.
Wow. What? All right.
Yeah, I started bringing him to shows when he was like, he literally went to CBGB's when he was like 14.
That's what?
Yeah, he started, if you look, there's like on Instagram, there's like some 90s hardcore pages and stuff. And they'll be like we took him to see like Integrity when he was, I mean, there's just all these pictures pop up of like this little kid. Like on stage at all these crazy shows. You know who loved Mikey was Freddie Madball.
Whoa.
We would take him to see Madball, and he was only, you know, he was 12 or 13 or 14, whatever he was. And when Madball first started, Freddie was like, he was like 14 in that band with Vinny Stigma and his, and those guys. And he used to pull Mikey up on stage. Make Mikey stand on stage with him because he was a little kid at the show. It was hilarious.
That's awesome.
I mean, it sounds like you were a great brother, but also put him in harm's way several times.
Oh, definitely put him in harm's way. I think about it now. I'm like, I would never take my own, when my own son's dead, I would never take them to the
siblings are for.
That's what a big brother's for, though.
Yeah. Like, 100%.
We were at Coney Island High. Burn had a reunion show, and Burn actually, maybe that's one band I would put on the list actually to play with, would be Frying Burn. But it was at Coney Island High, and they oversold it, and it was like 120 degrees in there.
Oh, right? No.
And Mikey passed out.
Oh, no.
And one of my other friends had to like rush him out of the club. You know, then we'd like go home. My parents were like, how was the show? We were like, oh, it was fun. Well, he didn't cash out or anything. Don't worry about it.
Like, they're playing, they got three more songs. He can wait. Yeah. He's fine. He's sleeping it off. He'll be all right. Oh, that's awesome. So if you have, Andy kind of asked a similar question. I think he's full. Well, I heard this recently and I agree with it. You can't steal someone's thunder. You can only share their thunder. Right? That's good. So we're going to share some thunder here. So if you had a time machine and you go back to, let's say, the first band that you're going to play in, let's say it's Illinois Jacket, what would you say to your younger self?
I'd probably say, pay to release some vinyl yourself.
Nice.
Maybe try a little harder to get shows outside of Berkshire County or Albany. Probably that.
I like that.
No, that's good. Yeah, it's funny because there's a point, and I was thinking about this the other day, is, you know, where sometimes, you know, you're playing music, it's like the coolest thing in the world, and then you and your friends, you get a little older, your priorities change, things shift, and you know, it's almost funny because it's like you think about the little like dumb arguments you had about a song or the way the bridge was going to go, or I didn't love that song that you brought to band practice or whatever. And, you know, you wish you could go back and kind of cherish it a little bit more because it is something that it's lightning special. Only strikes once. Yeah, it really is. It even is. Just going to shows, like thinking about all the times that you're like, it's too late. I don't want to go. Like, just go to shows.
Yeah.
Sometimes the best shows end up being the ones you weren't going to go to, or the ones you didn't think you were going to make it to.
Totally.
Those are usually the best shows. I remember Unbroken played at the Tune-In, and they played with Lifetime, Mouthpiece. Who the hell else played that night? I forget, but it was like, I was a huge Unbroken fan. I was broke. There was a ride to the show, but I had no money. And I was like, I'm not going to see him. I just gave up on it. And then like last minute, basically a buddy just like gave me $20 and was like, go to the show. And that show was like, they were really good live too. They were incredible live.
That's so awesome.
So do you feel like that buddy of yours, did you pay them back with interest on that?
Hey, I might have bought him a beer or something. I'm not sure. Right on.
I caught on to Lifetime as one of the earlier bands that I listened to, and
I love Lifetime.
Yeah,
such a cool band. I got to see them on their reunion tour when they reunited, probably like in 07 or 06. Yeah. They played at a Bamboozle Fest out in Meadowlands in Secaucus, New Jersey, and I got to see them, and it was like, it was amazing. It just like, it's funny because these dudes are on stage at like, you know, 45 years old, just like ripping through these songs. Yeah. Like they're just, it was insane.
Hello Bastards is such a great record. That fucking record's killer. I saw the funniest time I saw Lifetime at CBGB's with Earth Crisis. And I already came out on stage. I'll never forget this. And before they even started playing, he goes, "Everybody get it out of your system now." And like, he immediately got heckled for like 5 minutes. Like, all right, are you guys good? We're going to play now.
Yeah, I think I heard that story of like, yeah, we have a heart in our logo. Yep, like, yep. Just be done with it and we're going to come out and play music. Yep. It's funny. Like, I think of them as sort of like a legendary band in a way, even though there wasn't like a ton of years spent in that band or albums put out. Like, yeah, something about that sound.
I think if they came out a little later, like they would have been like a mainstream band almost. They're I don't know. Do you like their real early stuff? Like their more like metal-y emo stuff? I'd love that stuff too.
Mm,
yeah. It's definitely different than their later stuff, but
yeah, I think I just like the I like the idea. It's a lot. Like, I like when they get a little bit more melodic. I think more of my, because I just think it's, I love the concept of playing fast, aggressive music with a lot of melody to it. Yeah. And to me, like the sort of like the start of like the pop punk movement that played that style. And that even became like, I would even, what they call like easy core. Let's take a really poppy thing, but then we'll add it and make it like more like metalcore. But this was sort of like a hardcore concept and then make You know, I remember I was in, so I was in a band with Bill called Hope for the Worst, and we had written a handful of songs, and I had played all the drum tracks to these songs. We recorded it on an 8-at, a super VHS tape. We recorded all the drum tracks, and the plan was to go back in and do the bass and guitar and everything. And we decided we weren't going to play anymore. We gave up and we didn't really do anything with those songs. But I had all these drum tracks and they were just these really fast paced, hardcore drum tracks. Yeah. And I ended up writing a bunch of pop punk songs to those drum tracks, just making really melodic chords and stuff. And that became a bunch of songs for a band that I was later in called Minimal Effort. And it's kind of funny how that works out. But it was like, I think I was writing Lifetime style songs because it was more about having these little breaks in between and doing things that felt a little bit different, but kept a lot of energy throughout. And that's just what their sound is.
I think his vocals really made the band too. His vocals were original, and his voice was, the vocals were a big part of the band too.
Yeah. 100%. And they, I mean, a lot of the bands that came off like offsprings of that band, all Kid were Dynamite. Very good to Kid Dynamite and Paint It Black and, maybe even The Loved Ones. I think that was.
That is.
And then there's actually a band now. Ari's in another band now that's still playing.
Is he?
Called, maybe it's like Beach Rats or something. It's on Spotify. I'll have to look it up.
Is he doing vocals in it?
Yeah. It's really weird. It's weird. I don't know how to describe it. I couldn't get into it on my first listen, but maybe I got to go for it again.
What is it like? Is it like post-hardcore? Or?
Maybe. I wish it wasn't very memorable. If that helps. I remember being like, oh, cool. And like putting it on and being like, okay, that's not what I was expecting. We'll go back and listen to it. I'll share it. Make sure that I call it out. But, and that's kind of what used to be when you would find bands in the local scene, is that you would go see a band that you know, and they would play with some random band you never heard of. And then you'd follow that band and they'd play with another band that you never heard of. And that's kind of like what you do on like a Spotify or a music thing now. It's like other bands that sound like this band, or other like people also search this band and going through and being like, oh, cool. There's like weird super groups with people like Davey Havoc who play with the dudes from No Doubt in a band. And you're like, oh, I didn't know this stuff existed, but cool. Like if it's only on recording, like I'll check it out.
Yeah, you can go down wormholes on Spotify.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Yeah.
I find the best way to do it is to just make a playlist and then pull up a band and add like whatever the top listen to song is. And then just go from there, like bands that sound like, or like click on them, add a top song, and then just go through the whole playlist. If something jumps out at you where you're like, oh, I want to hear this again, give it a thumbs up or whatever, or the heart.
Trusting
and then
the algorithm, or is that just off of plays?
Well, there's been some interesting stuff. I think there's a band, was it Pavement, that I'd never heard before, like a 90s, like,
yeah,
emo, hardcore-ish type band that I'd never heard of before. And they popped up on a list and I added them to a playlist and I was like, oh, I actually kind of dig this. And I got to get into that wormhole later, but...
Where is the attention span to make playlists?
mine are all the same, so
depends. If it's something, if there's an event, I'm gonna make a playlist for the event. Absolutely. Long road trip or something. I mean, other than listening to the 413 podcast, of course. if I decide that I want to listen to music, you know, I'm gonna make a playlist for this episode, and it's gonna be anything we talked about, and I'll make sure we open and close with Gautier for you, yeah. Justin. just so everyone knows.
I'd like to close with a cover of Andy doing Gautier. Thank you.
Oh, we could do that.
We could get that. You know, in the playlist.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, why don't we close with a cover of that, Wick? I'll come down and record tomorrow.
Spotify's like, did you mean farts in a blender? But there's something magical about all of that. I always found that it was weird when people would listen to like hardcore music and they would immediately think it was just trash. And it's like, no, there's like, if you slowed this down, it's really complex. And just because you can't hear it doesn't mean that it's not good. it's that way because it's there to bring out that emotion. It's there to do something that maybe it's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. That's the point of it. It's like watching a movie where you're like, why do they have this coloration on the screen? Or why is there a baby crying? And it's like, it's there to build tension. It's there because that's what you want.
Yeah, that's great what babies music. Do.
Tension and release. What was that, Jared?
That's what babies do. They cry.
Valid point. Is there anything that we didn't ask you that you wanted to talk about? Is there anything we're missing here? I don't want to. No,
I think that's pretty much everything.
You're like, you asked me more than than you wanted to answer. Are you still in contact with folks like Dom and Matt? Do you guys still?
Yeah, Matt mostly. Every once in a while, I run into Dom. DJ, who, you know, from Guiltless, I still keep in touch with. I just saw DJ a few weeks ago, actually. But yeah, I still keep in touch with those guys. You know, Instagram too. Like, I've talked to people that maybe I would have lost touch with, but social media kind of makes it easier. That's the one nice thing about social media.
I know, the only nice thing about social media is it's like, oh, I can stay in contact.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, you know, as a fellow with ADHD, that you like can literally forget people exist if they're not in your face at all times. And sometimes social media does that.
Life gets so busy, you know, it's like be scrolling, like, oh my God, I haven't talked to this guy in forever. I forgot about him. And then you get a hold of him.
So let's make that a takeaway. Everyone, if you can, you go on social media and you randomly scroll through and you see some person that posted something you haven't talked to in forever, throw a hi in the comments. Why not? How's it going?
Good going.
Love this.
I thought the takeaway was go home, listen to some AC, let us know what you feel about it on Instagram.
You can also
Dan
do that.
Correct? Is it a good thing?
I was going to say, when are you guys having Danny on the show? Because Danny's the man.
Oh my God.
Yes, 100%.
Well, he fell off the planet for us. We can't find him.
I know. We're trying to track him down.
I saw him Pittsfield at that show. I went to a show in Pittsfield for the first time forever at the church. That happened maybe a month and a half ago. It was Scud.
Yep. We were just watching that on YouTube before you got on.
Yeah.
There's a video of it.
He was at the show.
That was recent. I thought that was like 20 years ago.
No, I was going through YouTube and I don't recognize this venue. And you told me it was Zion Church, and I was like, this is recent. This is like a month ago.
I didn't realize that was recent.
What was the other band that played? It was Scud. I remember. What the hell was the other band? Well, there was a bunch of bands, but it was a cool show.
Right on. Yeah, we got to get Danny on.
Yeah, Danny will be a great guest. He's played in so many bands.
And yes. Yeah. He played in like a metal band for a little bit too, I feel like.
I lost track of all the bands he was in.
Yeah, he was a good person that sort of, I think, bridged a lot of the gap between like the Westfield scene and Pittsfield scene, and sort like he was one of those dudes that would travel out and watch a ton of shows out in those areas and bring those bands back, and like he was in bands in both places. So definitely one of those dudes that created a lot of additional harmony in the scene in Western Mass.
Yeah.
And he was like really good about taking people places. Like he brought me to so many weird shows that I would absolutely never go to over in Albany. And I remember having to jump out of my car and have Sean T park my car because I couldn't figure out how to do it. Like, going to, you know, shows with them and Seasick and Tired, all sorts of weird places. And he was always good about like connecting the scenes for sure.
Yeah, Danny was better than Spotify at curating like your taste in music and like to introduce new stuff to you. Just he was awesome at that.
We were talking at the show because I'm going through a wicked metal phase right now. We're talking about newer metal bands or like metal bands I haven't heard of yet. It was good.
Nice.
All right, one more question. What's one of the newer metal bands you listening to?
Andy's excited.
I don't even know if they're newer. They've been around forever, but I just discovered them and I can't stop listening to them. This band called Amen Ra. Ooh.
I've heard them. Yeah, they're good.
And awesome.
I was hoping you were going to say The Darkness, but you know.
I only found out about Amen Ra because this other weird kind of metally band that I like called Year of the Cobra, which is just like a husband.
Oh, and, shit. I haven't heard of them.
Yeah. Have you ever heard them? It's bass and drums, and the husband plays drums, the wife plays bass, and she sings, and her voice is like almost angelic. Like she has a beautiful singing voice, but the music's so heavy, and she filled in for bass when Amen Ra was here. And I didn't even realize they were playing on the East Coast. I would have went and saw them, but that's how I found out about that band.
I've been going through a big Dragon Force phase where I just want to listen to them all the time.
I never really got hurt. Listen,
so fast. It's like, man.
It's so much more shreddy stuff now if you're looking for just that, though, Andy.
Yeah, I know. But it's just like, sometimes I'm just like, I go through a Dragon Force phase and I just got to listen to them.
Contortionist was one for me that was weird in between, like, kind of jazzy, yelly, metally.
Well, really modern metal that I've heard, like some of it's epic. Like I guess it wasn't something I was always tracking, and maybe it's not really like, I don't, metal's sort of like pretty wide. It's like punk, it's like there's a lot of different types there. Yeah. But I had seen, I went with actually Joe and another friend, Justin. We went to the Oakdale Theater down in Connecticut and saw Hatebreed, and there was like 10 or 15 bands that played with them at different points. And just some of them were like, I don't know how you play that stuff live. Like it's the fastest, like the drummers just like playing these crazy kick rhythms and stuff. And I was like, this is really cool. Like the talent that's like progressed and progressed and progressed. So these are, a lot of times I think these are dudes that like sat in their bedroom and just like perfected playing guitar for 15 years and then joined a band. And that's like, that's it.
I definitely like the doomy stuff more, like the doomy, slower stuff more.
Me too. I was just really impressed with how fast people play now. Like, I can't even hear that fast.
I'm there for the thrash stuff sometimes.
Sometimes, I just want a crazy guitar solo song. And I'm like, yes, this is like 10 minutes of just tearing guitar.
And is it too much?
It'd be all about Grateful Dead.
See, I know. My mom, I grew up in a Catholic household. I wanted a Dancing Bear shirt. She said no. Then I go to hell. Never been able to have it.
She's like, you can listen to Anal, but not Grateful Dead. Listen,
I'll get you that AC shirt, but I am not getting you that Dancing Bear that's tie-dye. Those people smoke weed.
Listen, you better keep on trucking into your bedroom. You're grounded.
I gotta find a picture of Matt's bass. It was hilarious.
That's awesome.
I think we're probably good to to wrap this one up, it was good to learn a little bit about some of the early history and to hear some of the names of bands today that, like, no idea that there was this connection. What was really awesome to hear. So we appreciate you for filling in a bunch of those early gaps for us, Justin. And we're really excited to continue this series. We've got a bunch more folks that we're gonna have on. I do want to make a quick shout out, and this is so similar to you going to a show for the first time in a while, like a local show. We all got together for a Halloween show at Hot Plate Brewery.
Yeah.
And had a really fantastic time. So apparently there's tons of shows there all the time. Some of the newer bands in town that play there, they bring some folks from out of town. But Silver Lake Booking, those dudes are amazing at putting together these really great shows. So we also have a planned podcast for those guys to be on the podcast in the near future. So definitely want to just like continue to like talk about the old and the new, because now hearing that there's so much more happening than we were even aware of, this is great to sort of bring this all back together.
Are they the ones that put that church show together?
I don't think so, but we can find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a good show or bad show? Cause we won't. It looked good. It looked like a great venue, huge space.
Yeah.
Sounded good. Even on YouTube for like a phone camera or whatever.
Yeah, no, I did it. It was a cool show.
Right on.
It's hard because sometimes those big venues are like, it's hit or miss. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the drums sound like they're on the ceiling.
Yeah, it's a little too much, but no, this was good. All right. So we're going to be back in a few weeks with you all to go over some more 413 podcasty things. I don't know what our next episode is, but we'll let you know.
Yeah.
But until then, again, want to appreciate Justin for coming on tonight, and we'll see you all again later. Good night.
Peace. Bye. Peace.